I don't know if you noticed that the, right about the last chorus I was taking on that, I found myself going back to, I saw Bill Monroe do this when I was 14, and it just, the way he would go. I mean, it's still, I don't know. That's why Baskin Robbins makes 31 flavors, I guess. The floor is open for questions. If you have any, anything, baseball, mandolin. Yes, sir.
Tell us about your mandolin.
This mandolin. Well, this one is one that Tony Rice long ago named it the Old Hoss. So Hoss is the short name, and it's so funny because of all the people who've ever worked on it. We talk about this mandolin like it's a living, breathing person, and how's Hoss doing, man? Well, he's doing okay. So, you know, it's truly, it's sick enough when you assign a name to your instrument, but it's truly sick when you assign a gender. This is very manly mandolin. This one put the man in mandolin. But, why? Because Norman Blake made it that way before I got it. This one is a 1937 Gibson, and Norman Blake owned this mandolin. He bought it from George Gruen probably about 1972, maybe. And it's the mandolin that Norman played on the John Hartford record, Morning Bugle. And John even, if you're familiar with that record, there's a song called Nobody Eats at Lime Balls Anymore. And it's John finger-picking this mandolin. So this is the one that was played on that. And I knew of this mandolin before I got the opportunity to get it. And Norman bought this from George Gruen, and I knew the instrument, but I wasn't that impressed with the sound with it. And it sounded like something, I don't know. I just didn't ring my bell. And so Norman bought it, and he's the kind of guy that if he's got an instrument and it's over a period of time, if it's not satisfying him, he will try to figure out what he can do to bring more out of that instrument. What he did was kind of drastic. He had Randy Wood, the great mandolin builder, took the back off of this mandolin, and then the braces were shaved, the tone bars. So shaved those way down, probably to somewhat like Lloyd Lord style specs. Put the back on, and nobody could believe it was the same mandolin after that. And so I remember seeing John Hartford, Norman Blake at a club called Kenny's Castaways in New York City. And I walked in right, and the PA wasn't even on yet, and Blake's sitting up on stage beating on his mandolin. I just went, I can't believe that's the same one. And sure enough, that's what, so Randy Wood is the reason that it sounds so good. And then after that, John and Norman, one night, they decided that they hated the original finish on this mandolin, which was a very, from that period, was like a very yellow colored, you know, kind of went, the sunburst went from yellow to black. Not one of Gibson's, you know, prouder moments. And, matter of fact, I believe this was a factory second. It's got the sloppiest binding work. I mean, it's like they would not let one go out of the factory like this now. You know, I know they wouldn't. And so somebody was probably had an incredible hangover to put the binding on this thing. And but then, yeah, John and Norman, they decided one night, this finish has to go. We can't take it. So Norman, I think he just, you know, probably used his pocket knife, and they just started carving on it. And John would carry a tape recorder around all the time, so John had that, you know, his great deep voice, and he was a radio announcer in his younger days. And I have heard the tape, and I regret I don't own it, because nobody knows where it is now, of John and Norman taking the finish off this mandolin one night. With John sort of as the sportscaster, you know. Now we're going around the treble F hole, now let's go in for a close up. And sorry, Carly. And then after, when they took the finish off, Norman said in his own words that he did some random hippie sanding, which means it wasn't measured or anything. And he was, and especially around this F hole here, it's really thin. And it's broken a couple of times back in the, excuse me, back in the 70s, I think, and simply because there's only so thin you could make a top. It's got to stay together. And And then after that, they had, right before I got it, Norman had Randy Wood put the varnish finish on this. So this is a varnish finish, which of course, as you know, is thinner and wears out a lot easier. So I've been playing this thing since 1973, so I'm not really as hard on mandolins as this may appear. However, I don't mind the pig scratch, but there's a reason. The reason I wear my belt buckle over here, I cannot take clothing scratches on instruments. If it's done in the line of duty, okay, I can take that. But it is amazing because now Gibson makes the new Sam Bush models and own a few of them, and I'm happy to say I'm happy with them. They're good mandolins. But it's amazing how, you know, I've had this one and it looks like this, and on those new ones, every time I put a new scratch in, it's like, oh! I believe I did that. Yes, sir.
Does the top go up and down much with the changing seasons, or is it?
Yeah, it does. Well, on this one, the top seems to move, and I don't know if that's the age of the wood, the dryness of it, but it's gotten where when we go to Colorado in the wintertime, I just don't take this one anymore. It moves so much, and it seemed this one. You know, it's fragile. It's an old man. You know, it's old, and it tends to move more. And the new ones, although I must believe that the top is moving a lot, or they wouldn't sound so good. This one, yeah, it's kind of fragile. So, certain places, I didn't know if I should bring it to the last. We were up here a month ago in this area somewhat, and on that one, I forgot to put one of those dampets inside the mandolin. So after a 20-hour bus ride, it's totally dry, and then we got up here and it was very, very cold and dry. Time I got home, the action was just laying on the fingerboard again, and because of the pickup I use, I can't move the bridge. So I actually had to go home and get it worked on, get a shim put under the pickup, raise it back up, and that sounds like it's supposed to again. So I'm careful to keep it by one of those, if you know what I'm talking about, those dampets, the moisturizer you can put in them. Seems to help. It does seem to help.
It
is a Barkus Berry Hot Dot, and they haven't been made since the 70s. It was it's probably one of the cheapest, least technically advanced pickups ever made, and it works great on this mandolin. I've got a few of them left over. I've been real careful. I was a pack rat. I knew they quit making them, and they were made to go inside a guitar bridge, so to speak. And I've tried them on my new ones, and this, I have a Sam Bush model with me as a spare, and I love that mandolin. It's a fine instrument, and it doesn't amplify the same way, and I wish I knew why, but maybe it's because this one doesn't sustain quite as long as a new one might. The new ones seem to sustain a little more, and maybe that's the dryness of the wood. I don't know, but this one, it works great on these, and I have some Lloyd Bags pickups on some of my other mandolins. They seem to work pretty well, and I'm always kind of looking around for the next new pickup to try, because I don't think that market's been exhausted yet, or I don't think the research has been exhausted. And I'm actually, Steve and I were just talking about it. I need to work with a company and see if we can come up with something that is similar to this, but because I can only wedge it in one spot. Case in point, you know, I can't move my bridge up and down when I'm on the road, and the action might change. So that is the advantage to like a bridge top pickup, such as a Bags or a Fishman. You can adjust your action as needed. But on this one, I'm kind of at the mercy, because I'm the kind of person, I hate to take the strings off an instrument, you know, change them one at a time. I don't like, because whenever the strings are off this thing, I swear it takes about 10 playing hours for it to sound like itself again. I don't know if anybody else has ever gone through that, but they like the tension.
Same thing with heads and drums. It's really the same thing.
Same thing?
Have you ever had a tone guard on Haas?
No. You mean a pick guard?
On the back.
Oh, on the back? No, I have an amplifier. That's what Jeff always said. Why do you guys try to play so loud? Turn back and hit that knob a little bit. It was actually Jethro that, you know, he had influenced me. He just said, why don't you put a pickup on that thing? And I said, well, I don't like the tone.
I suggest that you plug that thing into that Bose.
I'm sure it would be good, yeah. But Jethro said, he goes, tone. Nobody ever told me I had great tone. They just tell me they can hear all my notes. He said, I can't hear all yours. I said, I don't know. He goes, well, who do you think you are, Bill Monroe or something? And I kind of went, maybe I do. He said, get over it. We got one already. But, I mean, so Jethro, I mean, he didn't strive to find, you know, how to make it sound like the great acoustic Manlin. I mean, I'm still on that search because I have a microphone, a Countryman microphone, and a pickup. So hopefully the mic can give back, you know, some of what the pickup sort of takes away. But yeah, when we played an ensemble with bass and drums, I finally reached the point I don't want to beat my hands off. I don't want to play as hard. And John Duffy and Jethro both used to tell me, you just play too hard. And I didn't believe them because I thought, no, you don't play hard enough. But I remember Jethro just going, look, it's only that far from the nut to the bridge. You know, you're killing the instrument. You got to learn to soften up a little bit. And so it's like I spent my first 20 years trying to play as hard as I could, and now I spent the last 20 years trying to soften up enough that, you know, you're not overplaying the instrument, you're not over-attacking it, and it has helped to sustain, you know, stuff.